Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players Podcast. We're recording on Wednesday, November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving, but this is for the racing for the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, I guess you could call it. We've got a carryover in the Aqueduct Pick 6. We've got a loaded card. There have been a lot of very good cards at Aqueduct. This is one of the better ones I've seen. Definitely worth your attention. Happy to be bringing it to you courtesy of our friends at the New York Racing Association, who have been using us to help promote these midweek carryovers all season long. And happy to do another one with a man who's been a stalwart on these airwaves on InTheMoneyPodcast.com, talking all things Aqueduct. He is Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
I'm doing great, Pete. Very excited to be with you and give us a little post-holiday stakes.
Tell us what Thanksgiving looks like at the Tamaro household. What are you guys planning on doing? Do you have a crew? What are we eating? Give me the lowdown.
Yeah, we've got so we're in the new house. We moved in March, so it is plenty big enough for everybody. So it's kind of how I wanted it all along, and so everybody will be at my place. And we do a lot of the simple holiday staples. One thing that's sort of funny, it has nothing to do really with Thanksgiving dinner, but a tradition that I got into with my parents years ago is that we always eat lox and bagels on Thanksgiving morning. So I'm going to introduce my daughter to that, see if she likes it a little bit better this time around. She's gotten a little bit older. So I went to, we actually have a very good local bagel shop here. People from the Northeast, of course, because nobody down here knows how to make a bagel. But I went and bought some bagels today, so we should be in pretty good shape. And then, I'm going to do deviled eggs, and we've got a charcuterie board coming from my sister-in-law, and we've got turkey and ham, and I got a turkey breast as well, and just a million different things.
I love it.
All of it.
It sounds like a good Northeastern spin on Thanksgiving dinner when you throw in the salumi and the lox. We've got some good cross-cultural excitement along with all the good traditional stuff. Can't wait. We wish everybody out there in the audience a happy Thanksgiving as well. Hopefully, the fullness and potential drunkenness will have worn off by Friday morning. We can get up bright and early and get going on this Aqueduct card. The first race of the day is at 11:50. But the pick six starts at 1:45 with a 3 and up New York bred allowance race going 6 furlongs on the dirt. Nick, how are we going to light this pick six candle?
This is a tricky race. And I think basically there were two approaches to this particular race. One of which was to take all the horses from the seventh race on October 28th and just look a different direction. One thing that I can say about October 28th is that there was a big advantage to being inside that day. We've now seen enough run backs to be sure that the inside was definitely the place to be. And if you watch that seventh race in particular, Big Brown Shoes and Seven Lilies, they're on the rail the entire way. And the eventual winner was on the rail the entire way as well. So I think that definitely augmented the performances of, Big Brown Shoes was 60-1 and now is going to come back at roughly probably 1/15 of that price as what looks like could potentially be the main speed on paper. With all that said, I took Double Pour. I thought Double Pour had the worst of it, of the horses coming out of that race. At the same time, I'm also concerned at just whether Double Pour is good enough. He was 65-1 in that race, right? So, I mean, he was a long shot. He was an outsider. He's going to be an outsider again. I think my main opinion on this race is to use him and our man Mike as A's, try and hope that Looking for Trouble is going to hook up with Big Brown Shoes enough to to set the table for some late runners and see if we can't get this thing started with a little bit of a decent price, because it looks like the opportunity is there.
That's interesting. 2-7 on the A line for Nick. I thought Looking for Trouble. I wasn't taking Big Brown Shoes seriously for some of the reasons that you were saying, and was just seeing Looking for Trouble getting an absolutely great trip on or near. And I was worried that some of the others were just going to have trouble getting involved from further back, because I thought they might be able to back it down enough, though I certainly appreciate you're looking to get some bigger prices in there. So I went ahead and put Looking for Trouble on top. I did want to put the 4-1 Whirlwind Ride in there as well. Ended up very wide last time against a field that, at least according to the Timeform US race ratings, was stronger than this bunch. On numbers, I wanted to use Seven Lilies as well. I thought Seven Lilies could be the one to benefit if the pace heats up more than you might expect with a hot barn and some good-looking closing sectionals on display. But I think the difficulty of this race is pointed out by the fact that you mentioned two, I mentioned three, and there was no overlap. Were there any that you wanted to go ahead and list as Bs in this spot? I had the six and four as A and the five as a B.
Yeah, basically the 3, 4, 5, 6 would all be backups for me, with the 2 and 7 as the main players.
Gotcha. Okay, that's how we're going to get this thing kicked off in race number 5, which leads us to race number 6, 2-year-old New York bred fillies going 6 furlongs on the turf. And this was a race where I was pretty master of the obvious, I have to say. Number 5, Tough Street, I put on top, has run within 2 points of the par on the buyer figure scale. And that was a live race with 3 winners to have come back out of it. And the vast majority of them improved their figure next time out. I also had a word about the 6, Noli Temere, Don't Be Afraid in Latin, if Mrs. Adams' lessons from down the block. I didn't mention, I'm actually doing the show from Port Washington. I'm in my dad's old office in Port Washington, so maybe I have my high school Latin on the brain here with Noli Temere, but just makes a ton of sense. Caught money on the debut, got banged at the start, so probably has more speed than that. And then my only other word of advice in this spot was to take a look at those double pool probables before race number 5, see if you can catch any sneaky money or anything interesting on some of the firsters. None of them leapt out to me enough to include at this stage, but I wasn't going to rule out maybe throwing something in a little bit later. So I had it 5, 6. Curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, those are the main two, I think, without question. There's pedigree there for both. Tough Street is by Spidester, who's a 6% turf sprint stallion. The dam was winless on the turf, but she's also a half to a filly that won a stakes race at 2, actually down at Louisiana Downs, called by our friend Travis Stone years ago. Nice. Noli Temere has a great deal of turf pedigree. Obviously, Chistoria was a really nice New York-bred turf horse, a 7-time winner. Kelly Breen trained one of her progeny to win, whose name escapes me. I just wrote down the data, not the names. But yeah, 4 for 4 turf winners on the dam side, 3 of them multiple turf winners. There's a good bit of turf pedigree for some of these other firsters. Speaking of connections to the show, the 3 Admire My Crown is a half to a horse named Battle Red, who broke his maiden at Saratoga on the turf for our friend Jake Ballas and Richard Lewis. The 8 Imposing Treasure is a half to Ambassador Jim, along with another turf winner. And the 9 Cool Cats and Kittens, of course, named for Carol Baskin of Tiger King fame, is by Vancouver, who's a 10% debut sire and an 11% turf sprint sire. And the second dam is Skygazer, who is the second dam is a half to Skygazer, who produced Saratoga Treasure, who won the Autumn Days at Aqueduct a couple of years ago, as well as turf winner Veterans Beach. So there's a good bit of turf pedigree in here. I think with all that said, the fact that Tough Street and Noli Temere both have a little bit of experience, I think is going to make that probably puts them at a decided advantage. Even with a Noli Temere coming back a little bit quickly, I'd use the 5 and 6 as mains, and I'd probably back up with the 3, 8, and 9.
3, 8, and 9 on that backup line. We see the top line the same this time around. Let's talk about race number 7. We've got 3 and up claimers at the $40,000 level, going 6 furlongs on the dirt, a field of 10 slated to go postward. Who's your idea of the winner, Nick?
You know, maybe I'm being a little simplistic and kind of taking the easy way out. And again, I mean, full disclosure, we're doing this show before the morning line has come out. I'm actually going to check and see if David's morning line has been put in yet, because David Aragon is the gold standard morning line wise. But I thought Jerusalem Gates just seemed incredibly obvious. I know that I was a little concerned about Quick Flash dropping. This barn has a really brutal record with dirt starters, first time for a tag. Jerusalem Gates comes out of a race that was completely dominated on the front end by Trash Talker and 12th Man, both of whom are much, much better horses than the average $40,000 two-life claimer. This guy broke slow. He was about 5 lengths behind the field, a couple of strides into the race. And that was one of his poorer dirt performances. But the majority of his dirt performances are just a lot better than what these horses are putting forth consistently. I thought that the main alternatives were the 1 and 9, the aforementioned Quick Flash, as well as Rudy Rod. Rudy Rod's last dirt race was much better than it looks on paper. I don't know if he might have been a little bit aided by a wet track that day. I actually needed him to close out the pick 6, and he found a way to lose to Leading West, who was, I think, like a 15-race maiden. my bitching aside, but now he's first off the claim by Rob Attriss, and that's generally been a positive situation. He should be quite a bit more forwardly placed than he was last time too. But this seemed to me like a situation where Jerusalem Gates was just in a really powerful spot, and I'm willing to hear as many alternatives as anybody could offer me.
3-1-9 all on the A line. That's what I wrote down. Is that reflect
I would loan A the 3 actually, and 1-9 just backups. I feel pretty strongly here about Jerusalem Gates.
I had in the mix. I actually went ahead and put Rudy Rod on top, and it was all about the trip that I imagine him getting. Enough speed to stay in touch, plenty of finish. You mentioned moving to the Attriss barn. That's not a bad thing. Nothing against the namesake trainer here. Always weird when you see them, you know, when you see I'll Handle the Cash win for somebody other than Ray Handel, or you see Rudy Rod maybe here winning for somebody other than Rudy Rodriguez. But that's racing. That's how the cookie crumbles sometimes. I've got a goofy one I want to throw in here. Air Show, the number 6, I'd like to have on some tickets. First time gelding. I felt that you could forgive the last race based on the trip, didn't break, went wide, two back was on the wrong surface, and just those previous numbers put the horse in the mix. And without having seen the morning line, I think probably going to be a solid price. And then as far as backups goes, I did have the 3 in the mix. And then the 8, Horn of Plenty, I was a little bit interested in. Had a poor trip the last time on dirt. Another one for the Attriss barn. It's going well. I have no idea what price this horse is going to be, but had the look to me of a runner who might be a little bit better than the bare form suggests. So I had it 9-6 on the A line with 8 and 3 as backups in race number 7, which leads us to race number 8, one of our stakes races on the day. We've got 3-year-olds in the Gio Ponti going 1 1/16 on the turf with 150,000 in the pot. And you got to figure that number 6 never surprised, and his connections are going to be very happy to see that Public Sector has opted to head elsewhere. I haven't confirmed this, but presumably the Hollywood Derby out at Del Mar. I just thought Never Surprised looked a clear choice on figures and form. Nothing too clever there, just the old fastest horse angle. And I did want to put the 3 original in the mix. Has form that ties in closely with the top one. And I'd love to hear your comments on the ride last time, Nick. Let's just say the horse was never involved. Second time off the layoff here at a price. I thought original was worth trying to keep on side. And then I might back up, depending on cost, I might back up also with the 1 Kygo. The trip might be a little sharp. This isn't the greatest overseas form you see, but given the connections and the fact that we're dealing with turf form, shipping west would absolutely be no surprise. So I had it, the 6 as sort of a pressed A, the 3 as a regular A, and the 1 Kygo as a B. How did you see the Gio Ponti?
Yeah, I Never Surprised is 4-5 on the morning line. Just a note on the last race, even though we've already moved on from it. Horn of Plenty, who you brought up, is 4-1 on the morning line. The morning line favorite is actually Quick Flash, and my Jerusalem Gates is 7-2. So not
interesting.
Very realistic in terms of how we were looking at it. I thought Never Surprised was going to be exceptionally tough in here. He pretty much did everything but win in the Hill Prince. And worth noting that Soldier Rising, who I believe was 5th in there, came back and finished a very, very good 3rd against Elders in last Saturday's Red Smith. So good reason to believe that the Hill Prince is going to show up a relatively productive race. I think Never Surprise is a little bit better with Kendrick. I think Kendrick sort of gets out of his way, lets him do his thing. And I think that that's going to make him very, very tough to handle. I actually thought that the alternatives I wanted were the 2 to his outside. So I was going to loan A, Never Surprised. I'm sorry, I was going to use Never Surprised and the 7 Safe Conduct as A's, and I was going to back up with Munition, mainly because I know Original did not get a good ride last time. I just don't think very much of Original. I think he's a horse that got exceptionally lucky when he won the Manila, and I don't think he's much horse. At least I don't think he has the ability to wire this field. I do think Safe Conduct is a little interesting because people are going to dismiss him off of the bad running line last time. No, that was a very, very heavy turf course. They went in a very strong pace for the conditions, and he understandably tired. I don't know why he can't get a similar trip to the one that he did when he won the one other than back in May and sort of surprised everybody at 38-1. He's got the same rider on board. I think he's going to get a relatively similar trip. So I thought that he was a little interesting and you know, was going to offer some value at the windows. And I'll say that though the second place finish for Giroux, from Giroux, who was behind Munition last time out, came at a marathon distance, I think there's a pretty decent chance that Munition beat a good field at Kima last time. So I want to give him a look, and Timeform US wise, he really stacked up with these horses. So I wanted to make sure that he was on my tickets, because he's one of those horses that if you're right everywhere else, I don't think you really want to be beaten by him.
You're making very good points. And Safe Conduct, obviously the Queen's Plate winner, form of the plate seems to be working out pretty well from the Woodbine. You know, I pay attention to Woodbine pretty regularly. You make compelling cases on both of those runners. I guess I was worried about Munition having to deal with Never Surprised on the front end. But I mean, the horse has only had two starts, could be progressive. If I can narrow down elsewhere, I don't hate the idea of working both of those numbers onto tickets. Very good cases for those as backups, at least. Let's talk about race number nine. It's the Grade 3 Cumley, three-year-old fillies going a mile and an eighth on the dirt here in our featured race. Nick, want to hear your thoughts. Army Wife listed, I now see the morning lines have come in, 7-5. Coming off that Cotillion run, are you with Army Wife or against her?
So, and word also came out from Marty McGee this morning that Army Wife is going to run in the Fall City on Thursday. So that actually makes this a little bit more interesting race. I mean, quite honestly, I thought she was a cinch in here. I didn't think there was a chance that she'd lose. I think she's a lot better than these horses, but it makes actually for a much more interesting race to me actually without her in it. Where I think Crazy Beautiful will end up going off a slight favorite, and deservedly so. I mean, Crazy Beautiful at times has been very, very good, and basically has run two disappointing races on dirt this year, and they came in the Alabama and the Kentucky Oaks. And the good news is that Malathot's nowhere to be found on Saturday. So I don't think that's going to be a big issue for Crazy Beautiful, who I think otherwise has been very, very solid. One of the things that I love to see from a horse like this that generally has a pretty defined profile running style wise is that Brian Hernandez Jr. put her much more aggressively into the game two starts back, and she ran very well sitting just off of Played Hard. They were obviously very concerned that day that Played Hard could potentially wire that field. And though Crazy Beautiful won it in workmanlike fashion, I thought it was a solid effort, all things considered, and it came back very strong on any kind of speed figure scale. So I figure she's going to get a nice trip just behind the pace. I still think there's going to be enough pace in here with Shalimar Gardens and Played Hard likely to push each other a little bit in the opening stages. I think you could see a little bit of early foot potentially from Hybrid Eclipse down on the inside. So it should be an honestly run race in the opening half mile. And that looks like it'll really set up well for Crazy Beautiful. I mean, now that I can make my adjustments in terms of who I'm going to use, I'm going to loan a Crazy Beautiful, and I'll probably back up with who I consider to be the logicals otherwise, and that's the 3, 5, and 8.
Makes sense to me. I scratch into Crazy Beautiful as a single, numbers that are right there with even with Army Wife in here. So now becomes a bit of a figure standout if you cherry pick the best bits of form. And I was a little bit worried with Army Wife in the race about maybe being a little bit too aggressive on the front end and that big closing kick of Army Wife coming and leaving her vulnerable. But I'm not sure there's anybody who's going to be able to run her down. I think she'll be able to tackle the speed and go on with it. So I'll take another look in terms of backups. But for the moment, I'm all about Crazy Beautiful in the Cumley. Nick with Crazy Beautiful on top, backing up with 3, 5, and 8, indeed, who look like the logical alternatives as we head on to our nightcap, where we've got $25,000 claimers, three-year-olds and up, going 6 furlongs on the turf. Nick, how are we going to get paid?
Fun race, you know, and one that I spent probably way more time on than I wanted to. And I made the mistake of printing out my PPs for this card, and I feel like I put a lot more work in when I have them printed out. Maybe I'm iPad lazy. I think the last card I printed out prior to this was a Breeders' Cup. So I kid. I mean, I'm putting a ton of work in on every card, as hopefully most of you know who read it. But I thought this was very, very fun. I think there's going to be an honest pace, and I sided with Bourbon Mission, who was in position early last time. He just faced much, much better horses than he's facing in here. And I thought that might be enough to put him over the top. He's never been all too convincing when it comes to being an off-the-pace type on the turf. But I will say that I think he's facing dramatically weaker, not only than he did last time, but pretty much than he has in any of his last five or six turf sprint starts, going all the way back to November of 19. I mean, that November of 19 race, which Mo Maverick won by 5 lengths, I mean, that was an SGF 1000 special. So that was still in Jason Service's care. So this is a horse that's kept pretty good company. you know, I think the alternatives are virtually limitless. I think South Sea is very dangerous for Bob Claseros, who had a huge winner on Saturday. This is a horse who has really worked himself back into form, albeit on the lesser circuit in Maryland. But still, I mean, a lot of times with veteran horses like this, if you get him some confidence, it makes a huge difference. I think Valmont is dangerous. I know his rider took a lot of heat on social media for his ride last time, not really pushing Dancing Buck aggressively. And I think that worked against him. Valmont's a horse that really only has one way to go. Same can be said for Montauk Daddy. And Uncle Romy should have more speed than he did when he ran last week. Stanhope is also a bullet. So, I mean, there's a lot of speed on paper in here. One horse that I'm definitely going to use as well is the One Smile Brian. Mike Maselli, very good cutting back on the turf. Three for his last 13, 324 ROI. I think this horse is going to settle and make one run. I mean, look, I picked at 9-1, 5-10. So, I mean, I'm going to use the 1-5 and 9 as my A's and probably find a way to use the 2-4-6 and 10 as backups if possible. The good thing is that I think the middle part of the sequence, you can get a little bit skinny, and that might help you afford a little bit more towards the last couple legs.
You mentioned the two that I wanted to talk about, the top one being number 5, South Sea. This was just another situation where all the speed I felt like was going to get an absolutely great trip. I loved the run last time, just finishing with plenty. Felt like maybe was produced a little bit too early the race, two starts back. The 6 furlongs should suit South Sea to a T, and I think the race setup is going to be great. And you, Smile Bryant, the other I was going to mention, just cutting back, making one run. If they go too fast, if South Sea ends up attacking too early, I could see Smile Bryant coming from the clouds and getting the job done. So I had it with the 5 on the A line and the 1 on the B line. Sounds like you wanted to go 9-1-5 on the A line and 2-4-6-10 as your Bs.
Yes, that's my plan.
Excellent. Good stuff, Nick. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to a great weekend of racing. You're actually going to be sitting in for me on the late week show. I can thank you publicly for doing that. Who are you going to have with you Friday morning?
I'm very excited. We're going to have a marathon, but I think it's going to actually be more like a sprint. We're going to have Scott Shapiro on to talk about Churchill Downs. We're going to have Klaus Ebner on to talk about the Japan Cup and give kind of a preview. We're going to have Howard Kravitz talking about the stakes races at Del Mar. We're going to have Blake Jesse talking about the Saturday late pick 4 at Woodbine, and we're going to have in what other than JK Plus One might be his In the Money podcast debut, we're going to have Andy Serling talking about the Saturday late pick 5 at Aqueduct. He's going to get to Aqueduct in time to do it. So luckily our schedules are going to work out. So it should be
terrific. That's great. A star-studded show to be sure. And that's a great roster. Everybody's got to check that out. One heads up, because of some technical stuff, it's going to go up later than it typically goes up. So it'll be a little bit more like a late Friday, you know, early Friday evening type thing. Don't worry, it's coming, and it's not Nick's fault. It's producer Craig's fault. Let's call it a spade here. But anyway, we give him a wide berth around here for all the work that he does. But, you know, tricky with the holiday weekend. So be patient with us as far as that goes. It also does look like, in addition to the quick hit you'll have with Klaus about the Saturday night JRA races, that Klaus will be hosting a little pod of his own on Saturday on our network. Covering the, I'm not sure what he'll do. Maybe the last 5 races. They'll probably do some spot plays too. If you're playing Japan Saturday night, it's a good day. If you're up for the extra action, it's good to stay up late because there's going to be some great stuff coming from Japan on Saturday night. And Nick, we thank you and that tremendous array of guests. And yeah, it will be great to hear Andy's voice back on our airwaves as well. So good stuff all around as far as that goes. Nick, we'll thank you one more time. We'll thank our sponsors at Naira, and we want to wish everybody out there a happy Thanksgiving. May it be fun and delicious, and best of all, profitable. That's going to do it for this special edition of the show. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.